Okay. Whoa. Always get impressed with that feeling of power that you have. Usually I don't speak with an echo, but okay. Okay, I want to start with a definition of economics. And I want to give you a couple. They're similar, and most people define economics similarly, but one definition is the branch of knowledge concerned with the production, consumption, and transfer of wealth. Okay? Branch of knowledge concerned with the production, consumption, and transfer of wealth. That's one definition. Here's another that's related and similar. Economics is the science that deals with the production, distribution, and consumption of commodities. And then there's a note. Economics is generally understood to concern behavior that, given the scarcity of means, arises to achieve certain ends. When scarcity ceases, conventional economic theory may no longer be applicable. Now, that second definition uses the term commodities. So, what are we talking about when we're talking about commodities? Anybody? Okay. Dwayne's going to contribute a definition. But what are commodities? Yeah, Michael. Okay. Yeah, goods that are exchanged. Okay. And when we're talking about economics, we're talking about the exchange of goods, exchange of resources, how that's done, the system in terms of which that occurs. Okay, so Dwayne's going to give us another definition. Okay. This is the one to be preferred. Everybody listen to this.
I don't know about that.
Okay, and that you notice that does incorporate the elements we've talked about. Say that again, more loudly.
It's the allocation of scarce resources to alternative uses.
Okay, all right. Allocation of scarce resources to alternative uses. Okay. Just to think about this maybe more simply, we may have some trouble digesting some of those definitions. So when we think about economics, I think it's helpful to think about it as the way people relate in a society with respect to their possessions. Okay? There are other things that can bear on economics besides what I possess and you possess, but that's really, I think, what we're talking about. And the reason I say that is because when we have a technical definition of economics, sometimes the science of this, somebody might say, well, what does the Bible have to say about that? What does the Bible have to do with that? But when we think about human relationships and we think about possessions, okay, all of a sudden we realize that the Bible has a lot to say about that, and Jesus had a lot to say about that, actually. Okay, so this is where I'm going to stop talking for a second, and maybe the first thing we ought to do is we ought to sort of decide what aspects of this do we need to think about biblically. There are different aspects of a topic. So what do we need to, if we want to think about economics biblically, what are the types of things we need to talk about? Now, you don't have to just answer that question. You can, if you've got a well-developed biblical theory of economics, then just start going off, okay? You can do that. But what kinds of things do we need to talk about? Okay, very good. I need to not say very good, though, because Everything everybody says today is very good because we're thinking together, okay? Everything may not be brilliant, but that's pretty brilliant. So, but we're starting off brilliant, okay? No, sorry, the stewardship, okay? What? House and law. Okay, what do you mean by that? Okay. Can we say household finances? Okay. Household finances. And we need to talk about, law. The law of a society and how that governs economics or laws. Maybe we can, I'll just leave it like that. Okay, what else? This is good. Okay, can we put the poor and needy? Okay, so how we address poor and needy people? Okay. Okay. All right. Can you think of a better way to say that? So, inner motivations. So we're talking about not just what you're saying is, what you're pointing out, correct me if I'm wrong, is that when we're thinking about economics biblically, we can't just think about the outward system. We've got to think about what motivates people to the degree that bears on what we ought to do or the system we ought to put in place. Okay? Yeah. What else? Okay, so I'm gonna sum that up with foundational creation structures. How about that? Okay. Foundational. Since I don't have room, I'm just gonna put order. Foundational creation order. How that bears on what economics should look like. Okay. This is. Okay. Okay. And I think, Michael, do you want to weigh in on that? You're talking about micro and macro economics. I think one of the points Michael was trying to make is that one has bearing on the other, or they really have to do with one another. In more ways than one, I would say, but I'm not talking, so. Okay. I'm just going to, tithes, offerings. Because again, we're talking about a biblical view, so that's, what do we give to God? How do we factor that into economics? Ownership. Okay. And I think that's good. Ownership. I was going to do something, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to put ownership/property. Yeah. That's a biggie. Okay. Okay, yeah. Okay. No, I think that I think it's good to bring that out. And Tammy said inheritance. Would that be, or are you talking about? Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of like an example of what I think what I was talking about would be, for example, the Kinsman Beamer model. Restoration of property in Israel.
I was thinking about this the other day in relation to the biblical material in relation to an inheritance tax. And is an inheritance tax biblical? And I'm not going to say anything about that now. But I'm going to go ahead and say inheritance. We understand that that has to do with the system as it bears on everybody, or what we're leaving everybody, one generation is leaving to another. Okay, I don't want to leave anybody out, because we're going to move to. All right. So, what are some principles? But does anybody else have a major area or aspect that you think we need to address?
What about debt?
Okay, very good. Yes, debt. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna put that with law. Okay, because the government makes and enforces laws. So, but I think it's good to make that explicit. What is the role of government in economics? How do the laws of a society, how should they govern economics? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but now it's not the same as tithes and offerings, because when we're talking about tithes and offerings, we're talking about giving to God. But let's say charity. Okay, where does that fit into economics? Because it's not always that we're exchanging one good for another. Sometimes goods flow only in one direction because of giving. How does that affect economics, and how should it? Very good. Yeah, either one. Okay, so I'm going to put productivity down. Productivity, work. Yeah, that's a major thing. Okay, yeah, John. Yeah.
Because it's so easy to run up debt, and the interest rates are so high for debt if you want to put credit cards.
Now we're talking about Christian view of economics, since y'all,
yeah.
In case you didn't know exactly what we're talking about.
I lost the third thing I was going to say. It'll come back to me in a minute.
Okay. Okay. How about saving? Saving. Okay. We could. I mean, Yeah. Okay, so let's put it this way. Let's put philosophy of wealth. How about that? Philosophy of wealth. Yeah. Lending? Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Debt and lending. And lending, I think, is related to charity, but it's not the same thing. I want to see if Scott's got something, since he's read the one of the best books I know on Christian view of economics. So. Yeah, John. Okay.
Education is what I was
going to
say.
Yeah. Okay. Y'all heard what John said about that. So when I put education, you'll know what he's talking about. Yeah, Michael. Yeah, we got work down. So, yeah. Yeah. So kind of overlaps in a couple areas. Well, it has to do with creating wealth in innovative ways. Is that a good way to say it? Is that what? Whoever said that?
Yeah, that's the only reason I said that was because it's creativity is just a form of productivity work. It's kind of set apart in that, you know, like you write books or do sculpture.
Punch in a time card. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. 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 Yeah. See a couple more. Tony first. Oh, gosh. See, I was just covering my bases. I let it fall out like it. Just say Tony and somebody starts talking. Yeah, that's a good question. Okay. The other time, my other brother Tony. Okay. Were those two related in your mind, Jan, or? Yeah, and Tony, I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna go ahead and insert myself here in one little thing. What you're saying, you know, I think. What you're saying is part of a biblical view of economics. In other words, it is economics, but we don't think of it a lot of times. That's your point. We don't think of it as economics, but that's part of economics. It should be. And I'm going to go ahead and put volunteerism up here. We're running out of room. But I think we're okay. Well, I already put it down there. So, but yeah. Okay, yeah, I will add that because I think it's good to have it up there explicitly. Taxes are involved in government, so not just the laws that government passes, but taxes. Yeah. Okay. And this is my chance to make a statement in the way that I put this down. I'm not going to put, I refuse to put gender roles. So I'm going to put sex roles. Because that's the proper term. Gender is a linguistic term. Yeah. Listen, Dwayne, he's reinforcing you. Okay. All right. I think we're ready because people are, we're beginning, we're not talking about aspects anymore. We're making statements about aspects, so that's good. So what are some principles? Let's say, and I'm not going to erase this because I want this up here so you can look at it. But one thing, you notice this is involved, isn't it? And one reason that it's involved, it involves a lot of aspects. And one reason that it's involved is you could say economics is our whole life, almost. If you could define it that way, it's really not. But it's a perspective on life and the way we live it. And so it includes a lot of things. There are a lot of aspects to thinking about this biblically. And I hope you're seeing that this isn't just some abstruse topic that doesn't have to do with our lives. This is one of the most fundamental things we can talk about. How we understand it biblically. Okay, so what are some principles? What are some things that we can say, we can begin to say, okay, as we think biblically, you can pick one of these aspects. But how do I approach this topic biblically? What are some foundational, and it doesn't have to be foundational, but what's a biblical principle? How does biblical truth bear on how we should think about these things? And this is brainstorming. This is anybody, anything that occurs to anybody that you think is important with respect to economics. Yeah.
Okay, so we were talking, I was thinking about credit cards and wouldn't be on the main
Okay. Does that say something, Tammy, about debt and a biblical view of debt? How does the Bible view debt? What does it say? Yeah. Now, is that absolute? Should nobody ever lend anything to anybody? Yeah.
We're to help and support each other.
And that's another. Yeah, yeah. Although. And you know, these things aren't absolute. The Bible does talk about a proper reception of and charging of interest. But there are certain situations where the Bible commends an interest-free loan. And there is a procedure in the Bible, and we can talk about, okay, how do we apply this to ourselves? Do we apply this wholesale to ourselves? But there was a system of cancellation of debts in Israelite society, periodic cancellation of debts. Is that ceremonial? Is that something that's applicable only to Israel for certain reasons, or are certain aspects of that or principles behind that applicable to us, or is that, should we wholesale adopt that system? Those are important questions. But how should we view, and John quoted the passage, neither a borrower nor a lender be. We're seeing how other scriptural passages indicate there's situations where we charge interest, where lending is appropriate. So how do we summarize that? What's the biblical attitude toward debt? Can we summarize that?
I would argue that debt is viewed negatively, but we are to treat each other with love and kindness and with generosity. And we are to help each other when we can. And if like this, the Bible indicates, we should be kind and generous and loving, but we should be willing to lend money at a reasonable interest rate. And the word usurious, we are not to be usurious and abuse our fellow Christians with usurious rates of interest.
Okay. So we should say that avoiding debt, if you're a borrower, is the ideal thing. It's ideal that you don't owe anyone anything, except the continuing debt to love one another, right? But there are times when debt becomes, or borrowing becomes necessary. And there are also times where lending can be a legitimate way of making money through interest. But we've got to ask ourselves: all right, what are the proper times for that, and how is it to be implemented? And yeah, Tony. Yeah. Right. And I was going to relate this to, you can relate debt and lending to investment, but you can also relate it to work. Right? Well, I mean, what's behind the philosophy that you ought not to owe anyone anything, or you ought not to get into, it's better not to get into debt? Yeah, and part of that is the understanding, the principle, isn't it, that we should support ourselves so that we're not dependent upon others to the degree that we can, because if we support ourselves, then we're able, out of our support, then to help others when they need it. That's the biblical condition for which we should shoot. That's what we should be trying to achieve. Being self-supporting, but not just self-supporting, producing enough. And again, we're talking about production. Okay? That's an important concept. Production. Okay? If I produce enough to support myself, it's even better if I produce something that can help those who are in need. And that's a biblical motivation for being productive. One of the biblical motivations for being productive. Very good point. Yeah. What else? Yeah.
I think charitable giving, I mean, it gets to be like a red line, because you know, if I'm not working, I'm going to eat. And so it's like,
Okay, so and so we're getting into the whole concept of charity, and the poor. I don't know where I put that somewhere. Yeah, poor and needy. So, do you have some wisdom for us on that? Okay. Yeah. Is there a biblical, and I see that hand, is there a biblical principle behind that?
I'm
going
to call a friend.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. And work. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, and we've had in our country, we've had reform of welfare laws that required work, and they called it workfare. So if we were going to give you relief, but we're going to require that you work in exchange for it, and you're going to do something productive in order to get it. That's right out of that principle, the gleaning laws in the Old Testament. This is part of how we love our neighbor, and I don't want to get off of this too quickly. I just want to say, it's very important that, you know, love needs to be wise, you know, and we do a lot of things that are well-meaning. We can do a lot of things that are well-meaning in society that really don't help people. They really end up hurting people, and why do we do that? Now see, I'm getting into talking, but why do we do that? You know, in a sort of an insidious way. We do it because it's helping us. And I say it's helping us. It's making us feel better about ourselves. Look what I'm giving. But we're not giving in a wise way. We're not thinking, what's really going to help this person the most? And so that's really, really important, I think. Rose. Yeah, it becomes a monster that just takes over everything. I saw some other. I think I saw John.
Scripture,
Yeah. Yeah. So what's the principle behind avoiding covetousness? We're to avoid covetousness. So what's the positive way to say that? What's the positive virtue? Covetousness is what we're to avoid. What are we to cultivate to avoid? Gratitude and contentment. Yeah. 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 Contentment with who I am, with what I have. And don't we have to balance that? Okay. Contentment doesn't mean that we don't seek to be more productive. And it doesn't mean that within the parameters of who God has made me and my giftedness and my abilities, it doesn't mean that we don't seek to increase our wealth, does it? Yeah. Yeah. So we need to avoid the mentality of the rich man who had a big harvest and decided, I'm just going to build bigger barns and fill them up. We need to avoid that, which is really kind of a short-sighted, this worldly sort of perspective. While at the same time, we need to keep in mind, you know, I don't think that the confession is wrong. I think the catechism, shorter catechism and larger catechism are wrong when they apply in their exposition of the Ten Commandments. And they say what, you know, they're talking about the eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal. And they're saying, okay, what does the eighth commandment require? Have you ever thought about that? You know, I'm going to take this opportunity to do a little commercial here. If you haven't really studied and gone through the Westminster Confession of Faith, but especially the catechisms, and especially the larger catechism, I want to tell you, you really ought to do that. Because there is profound theological thinking there, and very good theological thinking. And here's an example. You know, just the way that the Ten Commandments are treated and just the notion that, okay, these are mostly, thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. But the understanding that the spirit of those commands involves positive responsibility. And so each one is treated with at least two questions. Sometimes there are more questions related to a specific command. But all of them, with respect to each one of those commands, you have at least two questions. One is, what does this command require and what is forbidden? And there's really deep and productive thinking in answering those questions. They don't say, well, it requires that I don't take somebody's stuff. You know, no, it forbids me taking somebody's stuff. No, what does it forbid? It forbids covetousness. It forbids envy and jealousy. It forbids, you know, and just, you know, you go on, it goes on and on, and it's an elaborate, responsible, deep thinking through of what is the spirit of this command. Well, on the positive side, they say, and I remember the first time I read this, as a young man, I thought, really, is that required? That's required. But just in a moment or two, just of reflection, I thought, yeah, it really is. And then, as I became more familiar with the Bible, I saw that the Bible really does. It really does encourage us to produce wealth, and it tells us that God blesses us with wealth, and He blesses us with abundance. But why does He bless us with abundance, and what are we to do with that? And just like all of God's blessings, it's dangerous. I think that's why God says so much about, or why Jesus says so much about money. Because like sex, it's It's one of God's greatest gifts, but it is dangerous. It is full of pitfalls. You enjoy it as God's blessing, but you enjoy it very carefully. It's like power tools. You know, they're great things, but you got to be really careful when you're handling them, you know, because you can cut your arm off before you know it. And the solution is not to avoid them or to say they're bad. No, they're good, but you have to be careful. Wealth is like that. And wealth is a good thing. And so the confession says the positive demand of the eighth commandment is that we should work diligently to increase our wealth and outward estate and the wealth and outward estate of others. That the eighth commandment demands that we adopt this posture, this attitude, this activity, and we devote ourselves to it. Okay. So if you hadn't read it, read the Westminster Standards. Read the larger catechism. There is much great stuff there for you. Okay. Yeah.
Also, in the shorter catechism, you quoted it very well.
Yeah.
Question 73, 74, and 75 about the eighth commandment.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to... You stole my thunder, and I'm glad you did, because I wanted to talk about blessings.
Yeah. Ungleaned.
People like Ruth and Naomi, the harvest, but the blessings come because the blessings were plentiful harvest in the center of the field, even if you left the corners. And of course, our society today is much too prone to harvest the corners and everything, get every last inch.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, all of these things are related, right? So, why would you refuse to do that? Why would you squeeze every last inch for myself out of my productivity? What's the motivation behind that? It's greed, right? And it's failing to see, it's covetousness. It's a lack of contentment. And it's saying, okay, I just want more and more and more and more, and so I can't give you just a little bit, you know. I can't sacrifice anything for you. This whole concept of covetousness and contentment affects our giving, our charity. It affects our giving to God. I guarantee it affects our giving to God. As a matter of, well, no, I'm not going to talk. My soapbox is coming later. So, yeah. Concept of a manager, the concept of a steward.
You're just a steward. You're
yeah. Right. Yeah.
So it all has, I think it all kind of wraps into that.
It's a perspective. Yeah. It's a perspective. Yeah. Okay, and we might have even put that up here, but it is a principle, an eternal perspective on things, and our situation in this world, what lasts and what doesn't, what are our values, what are our priorities, where should our priorities be? You know, There's nothing wrong. I enjoy a great sirloin steak. Okay, some people really get think I'm stupid because sirloin. They say sirloin tastes like rubber, and it's this ribeye that's really good because it has more fat in it. I love sirloin steaks, and I enjoy a good sirloin steak. But there's nothing wrong with that. It's great, you know. I really enjoy it. And I enjoy it as God's blessing. But after I eat it, it's gone. It's gone. And how does my enjoyment of that weigh against other things? Well, we've all got to ask that question. Other priorities, other values, you know. And we can't answer that question simplistically. We can't answer it in the way that the ascetics in the Middle Ages answered it. We just say, well, all of that, foregoing all earthly pleasure, is a virtue. No, it's really not a virtue. Not biblically. It's really not. When God blesses us, to enjoy His blessings is to honor Him. Recognizing that they come from Him, that's to honor Him. Okay? But that's got to be factored in. But it's a question of values. And when does the enjoyment of something become lust? When does it become lust? That's a key question. Right? Okay, we got a minute and a half. Does anybody want to make one last closing statement? Yeah. 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 Well, I'll tell you what I've decided, okay? this is going to take more than a couple weeks. I've also decided that this session has been so productive and you guys have come up with such good things, and that's before we had this list, that I want to take another week letting y'all do this, okay? I want you to think through it this week. And maybe do some concordance study, look in your scripture, try to find some biblical material that applies to this. And I want you to come next week ready to share some principles that you, and maybe even debate some principles, because we hadn't gotten to it today. We didn't really do much debating today, but there's a lot to debate about. What does the Bible actually require about a lot of these things? And so it would be great. I would love it if we had some debate next week. But think about, and let me just whet your appetite a little bit on this. There are Christians today who will look at, and I've dealt with it, so if you've been here when we've talked through Acts and Acts 4, for instance, they'll look at Acts 4 and they'll say, see, the Christian church, the early Christian church, were socialists. They just shared all their property. They just had, you know, sold all their goods and they just shared them freely. And so we should be socialists. And there are Christian socialists. Is that right? I mean, how do we deal with Acts 4? What does that really mean? And that is a debate within Christianity today. And there are other less extreme. There's room for disagreement, and there's room for discussion on this. So think about another week. Yes. So think about it for another week.
Leadership training this Thursday at 6:30.
Yep.